Hey everyone, this is Sheila with Rowan Holistic Healing and Wellness. You can find me online at www.rowan-wellness.com. That's where you would go to book a private session with me or to join a class. Also on Instagram at Rowan Holistic Healing. Facebook is Rowan Holistic Healing and Wellness. I'm also on Twitter at Sheila Rumble. I wanted to do a podcast today, and it is going to be an off-the-cuff kind of stream of consciousness recording, so hopefully that's not too painful to sit through. But I wanted to do this podcast, do a talk on receiving guidance and ways that you can know that the guidance that you're getting is authentic and legitimate. This is a topic that has been coming up so much in particular lately, and it's always been an issue, but it's coming up so much lately because we have so many shadows that are exposed, and it makes it very, it's like trying to see through fog. It makes things distorted, it's hard to see, and there's just so much of it. And so there's a lot of different information out there. And how do we navigate through that to find the truth? Because what we're seeing is that everybody is really sure that they have the truth. And that's just not the case. And if we can shift that perspective even a little bit, it allows us to come together in a way that we can learn from one another. And even if we don't learn from one another, at least we can kind of open ourselves up to accepting that because I don't have the whole truth and nobody else has the whole truth, then it leaves a little bit of space for us to just exist together, right? Without wanting to take the other person out because they're speaking what we consider to be falsehood. So I'm not quite sure exactly where I want to jump into this. I know that I post frequently on Instagram, and I just posted this really beautiful quote. And unfortunately, I don't have my Instagram or the book in front of me, so I'm not going to even remember. But if you go to Instagram, I posted this beautiful quote about echo chambers. And so this is a book that I'm reading about weaving fate. And totally not a social commentary at all. This was just her opening thoughts on perspective, basically, and the fact that we can get ourselves caught in these echo chambers where basically we feel like we're getting confirmational messages, meaning, you know, we're getting multiple sources for information and therefore it must be true. But that isn't truly what we're getting. And our social media, by the way, via algorithms, and a friend of mine, I haven't watched this. A friend of mine has told me there's a new Netflix special. Oh, and I'm going to forget that name too. I really think my brain is broken these days in terms of remembering details and facts. But anyway, there's a new Netflix documentary if you want to check it out, something about social media. I can't remember. I can't remember the name. It's going to come to me later. Anyway, but basically that these social media platforms have algorithms that really control your feed. And so if you're subscribing to certain topics, then they tend to push similar topics your way. Because if you get on social media and you feel, okay, if you go on social media and you're feeling very triggered and uncomfortable, what's the likelihood that you're going to stay? And so they really do kind of create these algorithms that send things your way. So there's two things happening simultaneously. There is an agenda pushing, number one, but there is also that kind of cozy, like I'm just going to kind of massage your feet a little bit to make you feel good so that you'll keep coming back. And part of that feel good coming back quote unquote, comes through sort of this reinforcement of your beliefs. Now, again, that's not 100% true. It also depends right now what side of social issues you're falling on. If you are not following the mainstream narrative, or if you're, you know, like for me, I like a lot of very disparate different kinds of groups. And so my feed is a little probably kind of difficult to algorithmically massage, but generally speaking, there is kind of this, like, we're going to massage the feed not only to kind of fuel a narrative, but also to make you feel comfortable in your beliefs. Okay, and so the point of saying all that, whether or not you believe that's happening or not, we do end up in this kind of echo chamber where, and let me put it another way. Okay, so my family homeschools, and I have often said, you know, we homeschool, we tend towards more natural, holistic healing and wellness type approaches, you know, eating good food and, you know, trying natural medicines before going into the medical system. So that's kind of how we live. And so, of course, when we socially interact, we tend to interact with other homeschool families, and then that gets narrowed to the people we interact with the most tend to have similar lifestyles to our own, which is kind of more that holistically minded. So what happens is that, or what I have noticed several times over the years, is that I will occasionally realize that I have been in this kind of bubble, aka echo chamber, where I think that people generally are thinking along the lines that I think. And the reason is because I'm with other people who share those same beliefs. And then it's like when I go out into the larger world outside of my bubble and start talking to people, I'm shocked when people don't, they're shocked when I say McDonald's food is not healthy, you know, and they're like, what are you talking about? So I'm, you know, I think most people realize it's not ideal, but sometimes it's a little bit jarring. Like, wow, I thought everybody had kind of gotten that message, but it's just the fact that I had been in this bubble with people who believe similarly to what I believe. So it's not just the social media. It really is just how we structure our lives. I mean, we like to be with people who believe and think the way that we think. It makes us comfortable. It makes us feel safe. It makes us feel accepted. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not what I'm trying to say. We do that for a reason. And again, it just goes back to that instinct of primal, tribal interactions. You know, we have tribes that keep us safe. You know, we don't live as isolated individuals like, you know, some animals do. We are pack animals by nature, to varying degrees, but we do associate in those tribes, even loosely, because there's safety there and there's nourishment and there's acceptance and all of these things that as human beings we need to thrive. So nothing wrong with that, but there also needs to be, sorry, I'm getting ready to sneeze. Okay, I'm back. there also needs to be sort of this awareness that that exists. And so just like in my example before, it can be a little jarring when you forget that there, that that tribe exists, that that bubble exists, can call it the echo chamber. When you step outside of it and you realize there's a lot of people who don't believe what I believe, it can be a little jarring, for lack of a better word. So my point of all of this is we have to remember that a lot of what we think and believe, either directly or indirectly, whether intentionally or unintentionally, gets reinforced through social media, through our people that we have relationships with, through a lot of different things, you know, the choice of books that you read and the movies that you watch. Also, I mean, very rarely will we say, okay, and maybe we should, very rarely do I sit down and go, okay, so I have all of these beliefs around natural holistic healing. What does someone think who believes in McDonald's? Okay, just as an example, like what is going on in that person's brain? Let me sit with that for a few minutes and just try it on and see where they are. Like, what is the mindset behind eating McDonald's every day? I know there's a documentary about that, by the way, but I'm not talking about that. But who, like the people that legitimately live that lifestyle, like who are they? What are they? How do they think? And not from a judgmental perspective. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about going into the opposing view in order to dismantle it. I'm talking about it just to like that. Let me just try it on. I'm going to be completely open to what I find, because there's always a little bit of truth in everything. And I'll come back to that in just a moment. But that openness to try on the other opinion. And when we try on an opinion openly, it doesn't mean that we have to buy it. So it really is like going to a store and shopping for clothes and just being open to, like, okay, say you take your friend who you like, you accept, maybe I don't have the best fashion sense. You take your friend and you tell your friend, okay, listen, I'm going to trust your opinion. I'm just going to let you pick and I'm going to try it on. I have final say if I buy it or not, but I agree to at least try on everything that you pick out. Hopefully that makes sense the way I said it. But so your friend starts picking out all of this stuff. Like, let's just figure out your style. Maybe you just don't know what your style really is. And so you try out all these different clothes. You at least try them on. Again, it means you are open to trying them, but you don't have to buy them. So at the end of the day, you try them on. They don't look good. You don't buy them. You put them back. So doing the same thing with opinions is really important. And we do not do that as human beings. And I don't know that we've ever done that. I think that that might be a little bit outside of, I do think it is outside of who we are, how we're built as humans. But I think we're also, I say that to say this, that I really think that a lot of what's happening in 2020, I've talked a lot about shadows and kind of seeing the shadows and integrating them. But the other part of that is really this openness to seeing more, which is part of being able to see your shadow, right? And so it's this openness to seeing more and at least being open to it, right? A lot of us like to believe that we're open-minded, but again, we're open-minded within a bubble. I always think of, I worked with this wonderful woman when I was in college. So when I was in college, I actually worked in a hospital, and my boss was just this fantastic lady. And I remember her telling me she had this very precocious child. And of course, I mean, I was like, you know, 19, 20, 21. And she had this, I knew nothing about, you know, having kids or raising kids. And she had this beautiful, precocious little 4-year-old. And she would just come in and tell us stories, and she was so funny. But anyway, so this child, before, you know, she would try to get her out of the house for preschool or whatever, and she would literally go through like 10 pairs of clothes, and like she had to have her outfits meticulously picked out, and then she would discard part of it. And anyway, so it became like this hours long process of getting this kid out of the door to go to nursery school. And so my boss said, finally, she like had this wonderful idea. And she said, okay, but we can't keep doing this. It can't take us hours to get out of the door. So we have a new system. And so basically what she would do is she would pick out two or three complete outfits and be like, okay, so here's your choice. You have this outfit, A, B, or C.
and her daughter, and she told her daughter, like, it's totally your choice. You pick whichever one you want, but the rest of the closet is closed. And so her daughter, though, still felt like she had choice. And so it worked, like the system worked. So I have thought of that so many times over the years because that is what the system does to us. And I'm not saying that, you know, perhaps it would take us forever to make a choice. You know, sometimes there are a lot of choices to work through. But so yes, the system narrows our choices. We also, I think, narrow our own choices through our perceptions of what we consider allowable and desirable. And so we have this narrowing of choices where you can choose A or B. But the reality is it's not A or B. There are infinite choices. It's just at some point we have to figure out where we're comfortable. Where's the middle ground of being able to see the options and the choices and move forward? So we can't get bogged down in so many choices. We have to be able to move, but perhaps two choices is a little limiting. But that's kind of where we've been positioned. That we have limited choices. And so we tend to see things as right versus wrong, black and white, up and down, in and out. I mean, so all it's very, we live in a very dichotic world, dualistic world, where we don't see shades of gray. And everything, quite honestly, if you looked at the spectrum, like I would say, I always see this as like a bell curve. And so if you have right and wrong or light and dark at opposite ends of the spectrum, that only, if you think of a bell curve and how close the ends approach, you know, zero, we're only talking like 1-5% of things that fall in those absolute categories. Much of it is in the bell curve, in the shades of gray. And so that's kind of where I wanted to go in this conversation about when we take in information, especially information that comes from other people, how discerning are we in terms of if it's true or not, or if it applies to us or not, or is it information coming through the light or is it information coming through the dark? And so when we relegate it to one of two categories, it gets a little, gets very distorted. I'm going to put it that way. And so one of my favorite sayings is even a stopped clock is right twice a day. Like I really love that saying. It's so profound to me. Maybe that's silly, but I think that that is so appropriately true of information that we take in. So you can see that even a broken clock is not 100% broken, even twice a day, even if it's totally unintentional, even twice a day, it is still correct. Or once a day, depending on what times, you know, if you use the military time. But anyway, and so if we apply that same approach to information that we are trying to discern how accurate or true it is, it can be helpful because what I found, let me give you an example. This might be helpful. There has recently, if you watched, and I don't want to get into like a huge, okay, I'm actually not going to talk about that movie. But it has come to light that there is something called Operation Mockingbird and you can research it, but basically the gist of it is that some of our systems intentionally manipulate, for lack of a better word, manipulate our TV and movie streams. And there's a reason why it's called programming, by the way, television programming and channels. We're channeling, right, into particular viewpoints. And so if you look at that, so I know I've heard people talking about that and how we can't now believe anything that all the movies and all the TVs have been designed to brainwash us and manipulate us. that may be true. It's definitely channel. You can watch them and tell. I mean, and I know this, if you're somebody who is outside of the conventional system, outside of the mainstream thought paradigm, you'll pick up on it much quicker. So I know that as a homeschooler, when I watch programmings that have homeschoolers in them, there's always a particular stereotype. Maybe not always, but most often there's a particular stereotype of homeschoolers that's portrayed. And so it's that same sort of thing that I'm talking about. Like, programming relies on these stereotypes, and where are the stereotypes coming from? And I do think that it does really channel us into believing these narratives, particular narratives. Now, that being said, I still don't see that all movies and all TV shows are all bad. Again, if you look at that bell-shaped curve, can't all be bad. There's always an aspect there that you can grab a hold of. One example would be Star Wars. You know, when you're looking at Star Wars and they're talking, I mean, there's so many messages in there that there's layers, okay? So you have one layer where maybe, and I'm picking Star Wars because that's one that somebody presented to me as being one of these. I don't know. I love Star Wars, so so I'm going to defend it. But I do see it as there being layers, and you have to be able to dive through the layers. And so I don't know. Maybe there is a surface layer that's programming us according to these channeled perceptions, but these creating echo chambers, basically. But if you dig another layer and look at it from a different perspective, it is giving us hints about things. Number one, if you look at it from a different way. So the argument is basically that it's desensitizing us. So it's presenting like a storyline and desensitizing us to that happening. Okay. So that's really what I'm talking about when they're like, they're programming us. They do program us overtly, but it's also that desensitization. And so apparently with Star Wars, it's kind of like this desensitization of some certain aspects. I don't know. But I do know that if you go below that layer, you can take what they're attempting to desensitize us to and consider it as a warning of things to kind of watch out for. So again, it's perspective. It's how you choose to take in the information. And then you can also look for the aspects that are empowering. In Star Wars, there's the idea that there's this force that connects everything. We are all connected. And so that concept and the presentation of that concept is very empowering for us if we choose to believe it. And so ultimately, really, when we're looking at information, whether it's coming in passively watching movies and TV and on our social media feed, or it's active in how we choose people that we interact with, there's always that digging through the layers. And it's like, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff. I think that's how you say it. It's always separating out, you know, with discernment, because it's not all good and it's not all bad. So where can you find the pieces that are empowering? I want to talk a little bit more about why I think we have to do that, because I got into, okay, let me lead into the next part so I don't sound like a totally random rambling person while I record this. The reason, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this topic of using discernment, because what can also happen is that we start to believe we have been, okay, sorry, I am trying to pull my thoughts together, and I really want to stop and edit, but I'm not going to do that because then it starts to sound even more clunky. But we really are conditioned from small children. And part of it's necessary, but we're conditioned to that we as children cannot make decisions ourselves, and we must rely on our parents and our teachers and so on and so forth, right? So we are conditioned in this paradigm of believing that we are not capable of making good decisions. Now, as children, of course, we lack the worldly experience to always get the full picture, but that is something we must work with our entire lives. And so what happens, though, is as children, yes, we need the input of others. Even as adults, we need the inputs of others. But as children, often our autonomy is completely taken away, especially in more authoritarian households or school systems, things like that. I mean, the school system actually has become the authoritarian, even telling parents what to do and what not to do, which I find very fascinating. At any rate, so we're not preserving as a core the autonomy of a child. Often it's getting overwritten. Now, I don't mean that for every family, certainly, and not every teacher, and maybe not every school system, but I think I'm reaching to say that. So again, though, but that autonomy really isn't nourished. And we don't see like this. What really should happen is that as a child ages, this balance, this harmony between the child's autonomy and the assistance from more experienced, more wiser people, that balance should start to shift where it's like a scale that starts to tip in favor of the child growing then into an adult, making their own empowered choices. We don't see that shift really happen. And so what happens is that people really fail to come into full adulthood because they're never given autonomy. They're never empowered. So really, and I'm saying this like collectively for everybody, we don't have a lot of people entering those later maturation stages of adulthood, of elders, of the wise people, because we have this very top-down approach to decision-making. Like we have very fairly rigid boundaries and constraints of rules placed on. So again, it's what I was saying about my boss. You might have the illusion of choice, but you're really only given two out of infinite. So that's a simplified, a simple version of what I'm talking about. But we don't have children emerging into their own power and their own sovereignty. And that's a problem. Okay. Unfortunately, I kind of forgot where I was going with that. I told you this was going to be a stream of consciousness. What happens is, so because we don't come into that, we're looking for authoritative figures to give us the answers. And so a lot of times when we're seeking information, we seek external. We seek externally. And so we see people as the experts and the authorities, and we defer to them. That isn't the way that it is supposed to work, though. We are really, because there is no formula that applies to everyone, number one. Number two, no one has the complete truth because we're human beings. And I still want to get to why that is. I keep kind of reminding myself to circle back around to that. But nobody has the complete truth. So there's no formula that applies to everyone. No one has the complete truth. And I don't know, there was a three and I forgot. So basically what I'm saying though is that there is no one answer for everyone. We all have bits. Some people have a bigger bit than other people. You know, I look at it like a clock face or a piece of the puzzle. Like some people have multiple pieces that they've been able to collect. Some people only have one or two pieces, but nobody has the whole puzzle. And it really takes us working together. So again, what I was saying with the children is there should be that shift of children coming into their own where they are making the decisions and they're using their own discernment in terms of, and I mean this from like, we're very scared of this idea. I think of people making their own decisions because then we're like, oh, but then they're going to make the wrong decision or it's going to be selfish or it's going to be
Well, yes, that is true for a period of time, but that selfishness, again, there's another Facebook post about how all children go through a phase of narcissism. It's very natural to do that. And because children are not allowed to go through that phase and they're never brought out of that phase, then we tend to have people that do make selfish choices. But that being said, you know, we're afraid of that idea of people making their own choices because, oh, they're not going to ever make the choice that's good for the collective. They're only going to make the choice that's good for them. Well, sometimes that has to happen. This is the paradox of, and that's actually how I meant to open the podcast. The paradox of, you know, we have to make choices for ourselves, but we also have to make choices for the collective. And, you know, we have to always look internally for answers, but we also have to look externally. We have to at least consider other viewpoints, acknowledging that we don't have all the pieces. So it's not, you know, we have a lot of these people that want to go and say, here's the way you do it. You know, like you go through and you have to do what's right for you. And it's just, it is that simple, but it's not that simple. You know, it's that paradox of when you awaken, you realize it is simple, but then it's a little bit more complex. And you do make decisions internally, but you also have to consider the external. And, you know, you have to look inward and you look outward. And you, so it's just this constant shifting of, and basically what that is the pendulum swing. So the pendulum swings from one side. If you picture a pendulum and you let it go, it's going to swing through the extremes, right? And each swing gets less extreme. That's not the word I want to use, but the arc of the pendulum reduces with each swing as the momentum decreases, as the potential energy starts to dissipate into energy. And so you get this pendulum that starts out with this wide arc, and that arc gets more and more narrow, which is what happens if we allow ourselves to go through this paradoxical living that comes through awakening and that comes through balancing this internal versus external, and balancing truth with not true, and balancing, you know, this is the dark and the light and all of that. So my point of that is to recognize, again, going back to the puzzle, we have, you know, truth is that whole puzzle. That is the only truth. And so we really have very few absolute truths as humans. I'm not going to even attempt to go there in this podcast, but I want to at least acknowledge the point that there, when we talk about truth and what is right, it is always a subset of the truth. It is a collation of, hopefully it's a collation of perspectives. Sometimes it's not even a collation. Sometimes it's just one very limited, narrow perspective. But the best we can do, so that's the worst case, is having a very limited, narrow viewpoint. The best we can do is to start to collate and accumulate a lot of different perspectives. But even then, allowing that there are going to be one or two pieces that are missing. You know, we just as humans can't see the full and complete truth. I want to talk about why. Because that plays into how we bring in information and accept it in its truth and how we discern it for how it applies to us. So this is coming from Dr. Daniel Foors. That's Foor, if anybody's interested. This is his book, Ancestral Medicine. And in it, he talks, this is in the chapter Affinity, Ancestors, Multiple Souls, and Reincarnation. And so basically what we're looking at is that the fact that what we exist as on Earth, we tend to think of it as one soul inhabiting a body, but it's actually three, according to this particular viewpoint, three different souls. And so this originated with, I may not say this correctly, the Mongolian shaman, I think you say that, Buryat, Mongolian shaman Sarangeral Odigan. I probably just really mutilated that, and I apologize. But anyway, so this Mongolian shaman taught that there are three aspects of what we think of as a person, okay? And it makes sense to me, right? Because three is our, it's really that first point of stability. And, you know, we use three. It's a divine number. And so they call these the Sold, the Ami, and the Sons. And so the Sold represented the bone. And so I'll go into those separately. The Ami is the blood, and the Sons is the star soul. So each of these is a separate soul. So you actually have a bone soul, a blood soul, and a star soul. And so they consider that the Sold, that's the bone in the body, the Sold is actually the dominant soul that influences the personality or the manifestation, right, that we call a person. So what we look at as a person, the largest part of that manifestation is going to be through the Sold, which is the bone in the body. And they postulated that this aspect was unique to humans, that animals don't possess this particular aspect. And that, I'm sorry, I'm looking for another note. This one does not reincarnate. So this is a once only incarnation, this particular aspect. I have some thoughts about that, but I'm going to go into them in a second. I want to finish near this, finish this part. Then you have the blood soul, which carries the ancestral line, the DNA, the epigenetics. So that makes sense. And then the final one is the star soul or the Sons, which is your cosmic. So the bloodline carries the ancestral, like I said, more the genetic, epigenetic stories and traits forward. But the star soul, the Sons, that's going to carry, like, if you lived in different planets or if you have reincarnated multiple times, like, that is that aspect, right? So there's a lot of terminology thrown around in this type of world, the spiritual world. And so a lot of people refer to this as the oversoul, the Sons, the star aspect. What happens is, and this is my guidance. By the way, I do channelings all the time. I do receive guidance. Even when I do, I don't advertise as that. Even when I do sessions with clients, I will sometimes, if it's appropriate, channel messages or give a client kind of what I see. But when I do sessions with clients, I do not take on this role of the giver of information or the holder of information. And that's one reason why I very rarely share my channel messages, because I recognize, for a couple of reasons. Number one, I recognize that my perspective lenses color my messages that I get. So even though the message given to me, of course, is true, but the way that I interpret it, well, first of all, the way that I receive it. So if I have my own blocks that may block part of it, and then the way that I interpret it, and then the way that I choose to form it into words, all of these disintegrate that message. So by the time I share a message with someone else, it's already been disintegrated. It is much better in my perspective, and this is also the guidance that I've been given and kind of the path I've been led down, is that we are past the age of gurus and religious leaders and political leaders. And this top over approach basically is what I'm saying. We are past the age of that. They are done with that time in human history. They want to see us evolve past that. They want to see the child emerge and mature and awaken
into these empowered sovereign beings. And so they are done with this whole idea of, hey, I have as a, you know, that idea too, that we have, that a healer fixes things. You know, as a healer, I don't believe that that's my job. My job when I do a session with a client is to hold the space. So basically I help hold the container open so that a client has the room to move around and has the support to take a look at their own stuff and to get their own messages. And so when I run a session with a client, I will say, you know, your viewpoint is the one that you trust, and consider, you know, you're the center of the action, the center of the stage. I'm somewhere off stage or, you know, and I to the back or whatever side, whatever. So my perspective is different. And sometimes I will share that, but I always make the premise that what my client gets, what my client sees is to be the focal point. I encourage them never to take what I say as the truth, what they see as the truth. And like I said, keeping in mind that it starts out as the truth, by the time we see it and interpret it and put it into words, it starts to get distorted and starts to break down a little bit. So as a healer, I don't see my role as fixing anyone. I'm not here to deliver messages or any of that. So, which is why you don't see much of that on my social media feed. But I am led to do podcasts and sometimes spur of the moment. and going back to this idea of these three different soul aspects, the bone, the blood, and the star souls. So the message that I've received, and again, I'm not trying to present this as the truth, it's just how it was received by me and interpreted. The message that I've gotten is that the purpose of humans to be here on Earth is for us to evolve, that we were, I do believe we were a creation. We didn't evolve to this point on our own. So it was a creation that was started. But the point is to get us to evolve to a point that we are able to take a place in the universal community or the galactic community. And it's rather like, they always show me a car. I don't know why. It's rather like a company, and maybe a robot might be a better analogy, but they always show me a car. It's like a company coming up, like creating a smart car. So they created this car, they designed it, they built it. But the car itself is designed to be, number one, self-replicating, obviously, but it's designed to learn, and it can only learn through experience. Just as I'm sure we're going to see smart cars as they start, you know, their algorithms are going to get better and better for driving without a human in control. So these cars are meant to become smart. But basically what happens is, so they need the process of experience. And again, I'm probably not going to say this nearly as well as it was shown to me because language is so limiting. Okay, and then, so you have this incredible machinery, which I hate to reduce the human body to that, the idea of machinery, because we are magnificent, magnificent creations, and we forget that a lot. But for this analogy, it works, I hope. So we are machineries. Our sun souls come in, and it's like, kind of like if you were to step into a smart car, and like the ultimate goal is to be able to work together. Because the sun soul can teach and help evolve the, what does he call them? The souled. So the souled, the bone and body. And so he can help evolve, or she can help evolve that souled bone, body, soul, and also heal the Ami, the blood line, right? But it's like when you teach a kid to drive, right? It's the first time they get in the car. It's overwhelming. There's a lot of stuff happening And I can only imagine once we get to the point that they're smart cars, there's going to be even a bigger learning curve. Even though the car is driving, there's still so much in there, right? I just look at, you know, when my kids started driving, like when I was growing up, cars were simple. You know, we had everything basically was like manual. And I mean, we had, makes me sound ancient. I'm not, but you know, it was like you didn't hook your smartphone up to your car. You know, it's different now. And so when you come in, it's a little overwhelming. So that's where we are right now. We've been here long enough. We've inhabited these bodies long enough that we have started to really kind of understand how they work. And now is the time that we're going to bring these three soul aspects together. So we're going to bring together the soul, the bone, with the Ami, the blood, with the sun soul, which is the cosmic. And we're going to bring them together so that they can finally integrate and work together and evolve this souled body, right? And then when we can evolve the souled body, then we can participate. Like right now we're isolated because frankly, we don't behave very well. We're not, you know, it's just like if you have a smart car and you're not really sure how it's going to do, you don't go put it on a busy interstate rush hour. You keep it on a test track, right? So we are still on the test track as humans. The goal is to get us out, but we're just not there yet. And so we're evolving that souled soul. Remember, that is the primary soul aspect that manifests as personality. We're evolving that, right? And we're healing the Ami, the bloodlines, via the suns, the star soul. That is why when we, this souled aspect, the bone aspect, our physical bodies create a lot of static still. They're heavy, number one. They're dense. They're clunky right now, again, because they're not integrated. We're not quite working together as efficiently and effectively as we could be and should be and need to be in order to evolve. And so when we're taking in information, that souled body does, and that's those perceptual filters that I was talking about. I mean, I'm just saying this a different way, that this is kind of where we get that cloudiness. This is also where the shadow exists. So again, what I was saying in the beginning, part of why it's so hard to see right now in particular, it's always been hard to see, but now in particular, it's hard because all the shadows are coming out so they can be integrated. It's almost like we're at that final test phase for the car, and there's a punch list of these are the things we need to address in order to move to the next phase. Those are the shadows that are out right now. So we always have to take that into account when we're looking at information. So I was having a conversation with someone today, which I so appreciate people on social media who, he basically said that, you know, there are false light prophets. And I was curious why because he had made a couple of posts. I was just kind of curious where he was going with that. And I asked him and he very willingly shared, and which I appreciate. But again, it kind like sometimes this shines through of I'm going to relegate this idea or this, this concept or this being to good or bad. And so we were just kind of having this conversation of, and it just came out, you know, that he considered this one person to be all dark. And I just don't think that that's true. I'm not saying that's never true. I think very, very rarely is something all good or all bad. So that was kind of the point of this of this podcast, is that we have to, again, and I'm not trying to say, that made it sound like I think he's wrong, but I do think that we get trapped in that idea of I only have two buckets to put something in, and there are more buckets, and we don't have to take everything as a whole. So again, like when you do a session with me, I will tell you, don't, you know, just because I say it doesn't mean it's true. When people ask me for references, I make the same thing. I say the same thing. If you're asking me if I have a reference for whatever, angels, where you can, it's just something we need to be aware of, that when we have, the Bible is a perfect example. When we have humans receiving guidance, this souled soul clouds what the star soul is able to see and express. And we have to always keep that in mind. So, you know, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But we can't also just swallow it all whole. So it's that kind of picking and choosing what feels right. And so let's talk about that for 1 second before I wrap this up. How do you see the truth? And I'm not going to claim that I always 100% can see the truth and can see through it, especially right now. It is so cloudy and murky and deceptive. And there's so many moving pieces and parts. And the first thing is to just be gentle with yourself, I guess. It can be difficult, especially if you're someone who has heightened perceptions. If you're empathic, for instance, I had a little bit of technical difficulties, so I'm just going to pick up. There might have been a little bit of a break there. But if you're, or overlap, if you're empathic or you have heightened perceptual abilities, you're clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient, any of those, any of the clairs, you might be very used to seeing behind the scenes, right? Picking up on that second layer or third layer that exists above that mask. Below the mask. But right now it's really hard. So just be gentle with yourself and know that it's super murky right now. It's like trying to dive into a swamp and see, like, you're not in the Caribbean anymore. You're not in that crystal clear water. It's like being in a swamp where it's just like all the murkiness is, you know, you just can't see. I actually had a dream about that last night. That reminds me. That was a weird dream. So be gentle with yourself. The second thing is to just really keep chewing on stuff, like really staying open to truth and deceit, being open to both with even the same source or the same person. So no person, just like, you know, we were talking about light and dark, no person is all light or all dark either. And so we are definitely given narratives about people, and both sides are doing this. I mean, this isn't political. This is just happening in general with everybody right now. And so just being open to both the good and the bad aspects of anything, whether it's a person, whether it's a political stance or a topic, being also open to some things are truth. Some things are being very manipulated right now, and there's a lot of deceit. So we just have a lot of everything right now because it's all just been stirred up. And so you're really kind of having to swim through the swampy waters trying to find the kernels of truth or applicability for you. And so my advice is to really just plant your feet and just keep that process going, you know, stay grounded as much as you can and just really stay open and keep picking and evaluating, and really opening up your discernment. There's a couple of things that we can do. We tend to be very cerebral. So we're thinking about the logic of things. It's a very left brain approach, that we are definitely, that's kind of been an agenda, right? We're only really using half of our brain. We need to be holistic, using both sides of our brain and our heart. So again, that Trinity, right? We tend to be very left brain rational. We have shut down largely our right brain and our hearts. And especially right now with social distancing, we are not interacting even unintentionally through the heart space, through that energetic heart space that exists. we're not catching that interaction anymore. So we need to make a conscious effort to open up the right hemisphere of the brain. So that's the creativity, the imagination. When I do sessions with people, we're doing shamanic journeys. So we're using the sacred imagination. But you can do your own journeys. You can create, dive into art, music. Vibration is wonderful for reintegrating and re-entraining the body to all, not only the earth frequency, but also the cosmic frequencies. So I love vibration for that. But opening up the right hemisphere via the arts, via imagination, via meditation and journeying, via being curious, just the fact of being curious opens up the right hemisphere, and looking at things more abstractly, which means just examining some alternate viewpoints, honestly. it's not that same narrative that we've been given. So opening up the right hemisphere, also opening up the heart. And so when we take in this information, we know, our heart knows if it's true. If you're clairaudient, a technique that I use with my clients that I learned from a shaman named Christina Pratt, who I love, is to tune the heart cord. It's called the truth cord. So basically you create a cord, just like we send a cord down to the earth, send a cord to the source. We have a truth cord that runs through the center of the heart that has a tone of truth. So works very well overall, but I think it would probably work particularly well for people who are clairaudient. You can also develop visual if you're more clairvoyant. You can have a visual cue that you can develop for truth. If you're clairsentient, again, you can develop a feeling, like this feeling comes when you recognize truth. And to do these, and maybe this will be my foray into YouTube. I keep saying I'm going to record meditations and I haven't. But there are meditations you can do. You don't have to do recorded meditations. People get really caught up on that. You really can just go into that meditative state. You can go in and do a journey. They're not hard. And then you can ask for guidance to set up these different conditions. And then you just practice them until they're comfortable. And if they're not working, then you find something else. Another technique that I really love, it's related to the idea of dowsing, is using a pendulum. So it's the same sort of thing, but basically you program your pendulum, show me yes, show me no, and then you can ask questions. So that's not a foolproof, but it does help you kind of, if you're caught in a mental loop, it can tap into your more sentient physical truth under, what your body senses is true versus getting out of the mind maze of what you expect or want or any of those. Okay, so almost at an hour, I'm going to wrap it up so that I don't have to download two videos or upload two videos or audios or whatever. So anyway, I hope that's helpful. I will try to work on maybe something additional to help people who want to set up those truth signals, we'll call them. But in the meantime, just remember to really take it slow, stay grounded, and stay open. All right. Thanks so much for listening. I will talk to you soon. Thanks.